How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is Tuesday morning, November 23rd, 2010, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We have tons of stuff to talk about today in terms of Raw, one of the more newsworthy Raws, really in the last couple of years. The WWE title, the Raw version of the title, changed hands on Raw for only the second time since 2006. So, very newsworthy night, and of course we can talk about the pros and cons of doing the big angle on TV as opposed to on pay-per-view, but that's coming up here in a second. And Dave, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
In the middle of doom here in Seattle.
Really?
Yeah, it's snowing like crazy, and the wind chill's at minus 5 degrees.
That's horrible.
Yeah, I just was watching the news, and I-5 is still like backed up for miles and miles and miles, people trying to get home from their commute at like 5 o'clock p.m. So it's a disaster area here, but I'm doing all right.
Okay, well, you don't have to commute.
Today I was thanking the Lord for not ever having to commute.
Yeah.
Just terrible weather, but let's get into Raw here. As I'm sure everybody in the world is aware, there is a new WWE champion, Miz, cashed in his Money in the Bank tonight after a Wade Barrett-Randy Orton rematch. John Cena, who is still fired, supposedly, came out and
Although advertised on almost every Raw House show.
That's right. He came out and cost Wade Barrett the match. Randy Orton gave him the RKO and won. Immediately, Miz's music hit. He came out, cashed in the briefcase. They actually had a 3-minute match, and Orton made a one-legged comeback, which was only slightly slower than his two-legged comeback, and went for the RKO. Miz turned it into the skull-crushing finale, got the pin and the championship, so Miz is the new title holder. Raw really ended with a fresh feeling to it, although, again, we can argue, was it best to do this tonight, or should they have done it last night?
Well, it's an argument. I mean, like, the one part of the argument is that I think that everyone who bought that pay-per-view probably feels completely foolish. That
yeah.
Everything that they expected and bought ended up happening for free the next night. But the other part is that if you're going to go with the mentality that the pay-per-view is a dead business and you know it's hopeless and you're just doing it to do it, then you might as well have more people watch it on TV for free. You know, watch the big angle for free and actually see it. So, you know, I mean, there's two ways of looking at it, but in the way Vince espouses, or at least what he's talked about, where the most important things in his mind are getting people to pay for the show through house shows and pay-per-view, I think that he, you know, in that sense, he didn't do himself any favors because you pretty much made the people who bought that pay-per-view think that, you know, everything good happens for free, and the mentality should be that everything, not everything good happens on pay-per-view, but you're paying for the special things, you know, and this is essentially, you know, they could have done everything that they did tonight as far as the world title situation, you know, in some form. I mean, obviously, it'd be, you know, you'd have to tweak certain things of it, but, you know, essentially, you know, and a lot of people expected that to happen, that Cena would help Barrett win in some form, even if it was inadvertent, and then Miz would cash in on Barrett, which I guess is different than cashing in on Orton, but they still could have done the thing where Orton won, and you know, Nexus then, after the match, beat down Orton, and then Miz cashed it in somehow. I mean, there's ways you can do it, but they chose to do it this way, and I mean, it made for a really good television show, no question. Even without the finish, I thought the television show was pretty good. It just had a nice flow to it, I guess. I don't know, there weren't really any great matches, but it just seemed, it seemed like a pretty good show. Maybe because of the Cena promo was so darn good in the middle, you know?
Yeah, I thought Raw was a great show. I will say this about the title change here on Raw. There would be a time and there would be a circumstance where I would have been 100% behind the decision to do it tonight. But the way that things are right now, I mean, to me, pay-per-view needs all the help that it can get.
See, that's where I would agree with you. I mean, if this was 10 years ago and the same exact thing would have happened, I would have just said, you know, it's fine. I mean, pay-per-view's doing great anyway. One thing like this isn't going to kill pay-per-view. But when you're in the thing where you know, they've espoused for 2 straight quarters that their big priority, 3 straight quarters now, their big priority is getting this pay-per-view business back turned around, this is not the way to do it.
No. And I will even say this, not even going back 10 years, but if... And I know that there's obviously zero chance that this is going to happen, and no one ever does really retire. But if, for example, last night, for whatever reason, maybe there was some circumstance that required John Cena to want to step away from the business for a prolonged period of time. If last night would have actually been a situation where that was John Cena's last pay-per-view match for at least a year or a couple of years or something like that, and then you decided the next night to do the title change, to me, at least the people that bought the pay-per-view saw something where they could go, you know, I actually got something real for my money. But in a week, most likely, John Cena is going to be back. So the one thing that they did pay for and the one thing that they did get out of that pay-per-view last night, it was all bullshit. So, I mean, you could have done everything exactly the way that it's being done here, and everything would have been fine, and you would have made the pay-per-view worthwhile, but instead, the pay-per-view was built around a stip that you know is going to be rescinded, like, almost immediately. In fact, it's already been rescinded.
Even tonight, Cena did a great speech and everything, but, you know, I don't really believe that hardly anyone in that audience, and there may have been some kids who actually believed it, but, you know, you could see with that audience, you know, they were just going with the flow, but they didn't have any emotion or real believability in the idea that, like, did they really think that Cena wasn't going to be back in a week or two or a month or whatever it's going to be? You know, you could tell.
No, and actually the amazing thing about that was, first off, I thought that we'll talk about everything in a minute, but I thought his promo was absolutely awesome.
So did I. I tell you one thing.
Well, actually, hold on. Let me say one thing real quick.
Okay.
As soon as he did that promo, they did the deal where they try to pan around the crowd and show all the people that are really sad. And this was not their night because every person they panned to was smiling or laughing or talking about something else. And then at the end of the show, when Miz actually won the title and they panned around to all the people they found at that point were far more upset than the people were after John Cena supposedly retired. So to me, that really says something about the believability of the John Cena retirement when people were way more upset about Miz winning the championship.
Yeah, the one thing I thought was absolutely brilliant on John Cena's part or the writer's part was when he got the people to chant, you know, let's go Cena, Cena sucks. And he even tells all the guys, now I want you to chant, Cena sucks, all the guys now.
And they did.
And they're all doing it, and it's like he made Cena sucks into a babyface chant.
Yeah, well.
You know, and when he comes back and they do it, it's like it's a babyface chant, and people know it now. It was freaking brilliant. They're going to have to come up with like a new... you know, something besides Cena sucks.
Well,
they
now,
really
now
want
the people are going to chant.
Pleasure.
They're going to chant "fuck you, Cena," and then WWE is going to be very upset that the fans aren't PG.
Yeah, then they're going
to screw themselves.
Then they're going to have to work on that 7-second delay.
Yeah,
yeah.
All right, let's talk about the show here. We'll talk about all the segments. There's plenty to talk about. It opened up with Wade Barrett coming out, and basically he came out, and as he was about to speak, the people started getting on him, and he stopped, and he just said, "Hard luck, I fired him." So, apparently, the actual firing took place between the pay-per-view and Raw, and nobody got to see it. So, he announced that. He talked about how John Cena was done, but John Cena had mentioned the night before that he had already made up his mind about what he was going to do before the match, and therefore, John Cena was clearly a biased referee. Referees should not be putting their hands on the wrestlers. This was not fair. He demanded a rematch with Orton. The GM buzzed in and said not only was he going to get his rematch, but he was going to get it tonight. And then Barrett announced that in anticipation of the ruling of the GM here, I have allowed John Cena to come back for one night only to say his final words to the WWE Universe. And he said he was going to enjoy listening to these words almost as much as he enjoyed winning the championship. And so, yes, John Cena was not even gone a single night.
Well, I expected he had to be on tonight's show.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, I think there's a good chance that the rating was up a little bit, you know, maybe more than a little bit, just because of kind of the curiosity of how they were going to handle this thing. I mean, I don't believe anyone believes it, but I do think that people were, I think that this thing probably had some curiosity. I mean, I guess we'll see, but we'll see when the rating comes out. I mean, if it's like a 3-1, then it meant absolutely nothing, but if it's, you know, a 3-5 or something, then we'll at least know that, you know, it drew some, you know, some curiosity.
Talked about next week's King of the Ring, which is, in fact, yes, another 3-hour Raw, everybody. And Cole then announced that the newest member of the broadcast team was coming out right now. It was CM Punk.
I bet you, like, 80% of the people thought that it was JR.
Of course they did.
Yeah. Although, I have to say, I thought Punk was really good.
He was very good, and this is a permanent job until his bad hip is rehabbed, which could be a while. So, that's good news, at least.
He's talking January.
Yeah. Sheamus and R-Truth in a King of the Ring qualifier. After all of these weeks and perhaps months of trying to get that damn new song over and failing, they gave up and went back to the old music. And the people went nuts for it.
I knew this from week two. I knew that this was going to happen.
Yep. Hey, you know, they deserve credit from learning from something that did not work.
Yep, yep, yep. I mean, they gave it every chance. You could tell when, I think it was last week's show, where they didn't play it when it came out, but they played this song, like, in the back, and then he came out to his new song and got no reaction again.
Mm-hmm.
And right after they, like, preconditioned people. And so, you know, you could just see it. And then, you know, he hasn't gotten a reaction ever since he got this new song, and then back to the old song, and the place was going crazy. So, you know. It's just the deal. He's that ring entrance. But the people were into that. They were really into the Sheamus R-Truth match.
Yeah, Sheamus won with the high cross, which is not the high cross off the top. It's the Celtic cross, the razor's edge. And I hate that move. I would never take that move. It is very tough to do it correctly on an opponent every single time. And again, R-Truth was the latest victim to smash his head into the canvas on the landing. And I don't know. I don't know if he got a concussion, but it looked really bad. And Sheamus won. He is qualified for the King of the Ring. I suppose I'm probably going out on a limb here and predicting that he wins to set up the return of the King of Kings, or at least going to the finals and Hunter screws him up. So that would be my prediction. So there you go.
Yeah.
Layla and Lay Cool, actually, were outside the building. They were all pissed off that Natalya had taken the title, and they tried to get in, and the security guy told them they could not get into the building because they were not Raw talent. So after 10 years of a brand extension, they are finally enforcing this, and Natalya walked up.
Guess what? They're going to enforce it for exactly 7 more days. Next week's show is going to be filled with SmackDown talent.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true. And the security guy asked Natalya if she knew these people, and she said, no, I've never seen them before, and they were booted out. So
I will say this. I was completely amused by this segment.
It was not bad.
Yeah.
It's
stupid. And there's, you know, the aspect that you sort of downgrade your stars when the security guy, like, to me, they should be a little higher on the pecking order. Like you do this comedy would probably be better with, like, you know, Primo Cologne or somebody.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it worked and it was funny, but it also kind of like, well, if the security guard has no idea who these people are, then how big of stars could they be?
No, maybe
I mean,
he did
in
know.
In theory, you're trying to make that your superstars are you know, household names.
Maybe Natalya paid him off.
Well, it's not. They're not going to do that. They're going to never bring this up again.
That's true. Santino and Kozlov hanging out backstage, and Santino said he could not believe they lost last night, and Kozlov said, we'll win next time. Tomorrow is another day. And Santino was all depressed and said, what in the universe could possibly cheer me up? And suddenly, Tamina showed up strumming a ukulele. She sang Santino a song. He asked for a kiss. She gave him the look like she was appalled, but then she grabbed him and kissed him. And his heart was all aflutter. So this storyline continues.
This has been a slow-moving storyline.
And it has. It has. We had Orton putting all his stuff on backstage. Josh interviewed him with the usual idiotic question. Can you imagine if Ariel Helwani went up to guys and asked stupid questions like this? He's like, I know you won last night.
Ariel Helwani.
Yeah. He goes, do you think you can win again? Like, what kind of a stupid question is that?
He'd be going.
he'd have
Randy,
beat...
do you wish you got into MMA?
Hey, that's a better question. Do you think you can win again tonight?
Well, this week it would be, that's for sure.
Orton's like, of course I'm going to win. He talked about how he still respected John Cena, and he guaranteed that Barrett was not leaving with the belt. And whenever a babyface makes a guarantee, well, you know how that goes.
Yeah.
Miz and Zeke in a King of the Ring qualifier, Riley came out, and he said, 10 minutes ago, the greatest superstar of all time had an anxiety attack. And so he was going to take his place and qualify for him.
I was expecting Carl Parisian to come out.
Actually, that is a bad time.
He does need a new job, you know.
I was going to say it's a bad time for a Carl Parisian joke, but Punk said, is he under the influence or something? And that, of course, was a reference to the DUI. And Zeke played Babyface in Peril, which sucked. Then he made a comeback and won. So Zeke is in the King of the Ring tournament next week. Justin Roberts interviewed John Cena.
Good luck to who he faces.
I'll say. Probably end up being Daniel Bryan, and he'll squash him, and all this work has been for naught. Oh. Terrible thought. Cena came out, and he was so awesome here, because he came out, and he's all happy and jolly and friendly, and says it's great to go out like this and not carrying somebody's bags. And then he starts talking about the WWE universe and what the fans have meant to him and how much he respects the company and thanks all these guys, and starts to break down a little bit and does the deal where he wants the girls to chant "Let's go Cena" and the guys to chant "Cena sucks," which of course they do. Talks about how his brother's wife gave birth and he wasn't there for it, and his mom, her birthday was in a couple of days, and he hadn't been there in 10 years, but now he was going to go home and give her the best birthday present she'd ever had. And this was like the best babyface promo of all time. And he had some words for Wade Barrett, which were, stop taking shortcuts, stop trying to take the easy way out, just give everything to the fans, they'll give you everything in return. Said he'd probably get fired for this, but he wanted him to know that karma was a bitch. He noted that Billy Kidman was going to kill him for going over his time. Thank the universe, this and that. And as noted, after this awesome goodbye speech, they cut to a bunch of random fans, and not a single one of them looked in the least bit concerned. And what the hell can you do? But I just thought he was outstanding here.
Absolutely. I thought...
It's one of those things like the Team 3D when they won that match with the guns, where it's like...
They lost the match to the guns.
They lost the match, but it was a great match. But the point was, it's too bad these people don't really retire in these angles, because usually these angles are so great.
Did you ever see the tape of when Terry Funk first retired in Japan?
The one from 82?
83, yeah.
83, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the most awesome thing in the whole world. Of course, he didn't... But it wasn't so freaking destroyed. Like, at that point in time, like, everyone believed him.
And he probably believed it, didn't he?
Absolutely incredible. And, of course, he came out of retirement 17 times since then, but still.
Yeah. It's just too bad, because I was just watching this, and it was just like, it was so great, and you know he's coming back next week. And it really sucked. You know, I was thinking about the Shawn Michaels retirement today, the speech that he gave, and you know, there's a lot of people my age, and you know, actually all sorts of different ages, but, you know, my age and up, that the retirement of Shawn Michaels should have been like one of the most memorable things of this generation. And instead, I mean, nothing against what happened, but he came out, it did a little better than usual rating on Raw, it got a little better than usual reaction, and that was it. And part of the reason was because the guy he beat like a year earlier or whatever, he came back a month earlier, and no one believes any of this bullshit. But here's a poor guy that really was like, in his heart, retiring. And everybody, for the most part, I think, saw it as a goofy angle.
How could you not?
I know, and it sucks.
I mean, it was... The Flair thing, I think the reason the Flair thing kind of worked was because Flair was so old that people actually could buy that he was going to retire, whereas with Shawn, even though Shawn is old enough to retire as an athlete, actually too old to retire as an athlete, people just know that wrestlers go on until they're, you know, in their 50s anyway. You know, I mean, Ric Flair was almost 60, so you can kind of see it.
Yeah.
But Shawn was, you know, 45-ish, right? Shawn was born in 65, so it was earlier this year. So I think it's 44, 45. So I think in people's minds, it's like, you know, of course he's coming back because everybody, you know, everyone always does. And with John, you know, John Cena at 33, I mean, they know full well that he's not going to TNA. And you know what I mean? It's people know too much in that sense, and when you had just like last year with Jericho having to leave Raw like 14 different times and never doing it, so it's like, why would people believe, you know, a stipulation like that reached stipulation? I mean, I think people were kind of hoping that the story of the stipulation would be important because Cena would then, you know, screw Orton and give Barrett the title or do something. But I think they didn't really expect him to retire because at the end it was like, well, they can't do the retirement because he's not going to retire and who would ever believe it? And then they just did anyway.
Yeah. So then we had the Daniel Bryan-Ted DiBiase rematch, also a King of the Ring qualifier. And as Bryan's coming out, Brie Bella runs down and gives him a hug, and he just kind of gets into the ring. And this was the first mention by Lawler that Daniel appeared to ignore her. And they brought this up like four times during this match, so I don't know if they're
clearly that's the storyline is that what is this storyline that isn't like girls?
That was the impression that I got.
I don't know if that's a good storyline.
I would think it would probably not be a good storyline, but who knows? So
yeah.
He did beat Ted DiBiase in like 2 minutes. Really nothing to the match because I think
boy, Ted DiBiase's stock dropped in the last 9 months.
Yeah.
I mean, lose. I mean, it's one thing to lose, but I mean, he got no intro, which is probably Casino went long. And I mean, the match probably also was probably. I wouldn't be surprised if the match was cut 3 or 4 minutes because of Cena.
I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah.
But having said that, it's still. God, does it look bad when you go out there and you're losing in 2 minutes?
Yeah.
You know, and getting no intro, and yeah, you had Nikki Bella there and Brie Bella there, and they were both fighting over him. And
well, the other Bella came out, and I guess they were both fighting over Daniel Bryan, and then he backed up and put his hands up as if to say no, 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 and then he made them hug. And that was the end of the segment. And apparently he sent out a WWE Universe tweet where he just basically said, I have no idea what the Bellas were doing. So I have no idea what the storyline is, but...
Well, it's the deal from the storyline from about a month ago where they had all those women dance with him and they wanted to do the thing where, you know, all the women like him. So, you know, it took him a month to go back to it, but they did.
And now he doesn't like the women?
I don't know. That's really... Yeah. You know, I don't know if, like I said, I don't know if that's the right way to handle it.
Natalya and
maybe,
Alicia.
Maybe it's like he's a monk.
Sure. Hey, grow the beard again.
Yeah.
Natalya and Alicia Fox. Alicia pulled out some of her extensions, which made her mad, and she made her come back and won with the sharpshooter. Really not much to it.
Yeah.
They're apparently putting Morrison and Melina back together, where she wished him luck backstage, and she slapped him on the ass, and that made him all smiley and geeky. And God, did that make him geeky.
This was too similar to what I saw in TNA. I mean, I can't believe that this wasn't a copy of what, you know, Tara did with
Or maybe
Generation
they were spoofing
A.
it to show how stupid
it
was.
You know, it's like, it's really weird how... You know, Raw often will do something right after Impact does it, and sometimes Impact does too. And you know, the idea that like they're not copying from each other. Sometimes they are, and sometimes it's probably coincidental. Probably 70% of the time it's not, but this one, there's no way that it was coincidental.
Morrison faced Tyson Kidd in a qualifier, and Tyson worked heel here. He was quickly beaten, so I don't know.
That was a great heel turn.
Yeah, I don't know about this one here for poor Tyson.
Yeah.
Then it was Orton and Barrett.
They did so anyway. They've done the turn, and they've done no promo for the turn, and no this turn's not getting over at all.
Yeah, they spent so much time building it up, and then did nothing with it.
Yeah.
Finally, we had the main event, and the last 15-20 minutes of this show was exceptional television. Opens up with Orton coming out, and as he's in the aisle, he gets attacked by Nexus. They stomp a mud hole in him. They leave him for dead. Bunch of geeks run down. He's clutching at his knee. Crowd is chanting, Nexus sucks. They go to commercial. They come back. Cole says the GM has ruled that Nexus is barred from ringside. Fine timing, GM. So
yeah, really.
Barrett's in the ring, and he's telling the ref that Orton isn't going to come out. Title should be forfeited to him. But then, of course, Orton's music does hit, and he limps down to the ring. Barrett goes to work on the knee, and they do a quick match, and Orton makes a quick comeback. Barrett cuts him off, sets him up for his finish, hits it, and as he's going for the cover, Cena runs through the crowd, yanks the ref out of the ring. So at that point, he jumped inside, gave Wade the FU, laid a whooping on him, Nexus ran down, chased Cena through the crowd. Barrett slowly got to his feet, Orton hit the RKO, 1, 2, 3, everybody was happy, Orton retained the title, and then suddenly Miz's music hit, and Orton, look on his face when that music hit, was quite awesome. And so out comes Miz. He cashes in the briefcase. They actually had a longer match than usual in this situation, but it's about 3 minutes as opposed to a minute 30, which is the usual go-to time for these types of deals. And he worked over the leg for a while. Orton made a comeback. Orton went for the RKO, and Miz slipped behind. Skull-crushing finale. 1, 2, 3. New champion. Got a bunch of shots of kids in the crowd that were, one in particular that looked like the girl out of The Exorcist, Linda Blair. It was awesome. She was so angry at this. And, yeah, so he's the champion, celebrated on the ramp, and it was a very newsworthy finish to what was a great show. And, again, it really felt when the show went off the air that they've got a couple of directions here that are actually very fresh.
So how long will it take? How many times? We say this every couple of months, and usually by 2 weeks later?
Well, the difference here is that, unlike Jack Swagger, I think with Miz, the very idea that he was put on the cover of SmackDown versus Raw 2011, the idea that they've actually continued the plan they had earlier in this year of having him feud with Orton and pushing him all the way to the top, he, I think, has got I'm more confident in this one.
Well, he can hang at the top, and he should be at the top. I mean, as a top heel, so that's, you know, that's fine. But it's just, you know, their follow up on a lot of the stuff. I mean, you know, I can't trust it. You know, I mean, they're gonna have to earn trust because they have a lot of like beginnings of they really do have a lot of very good beginnings of scenarios.
Yeah,
but
well,
their
TNA does as well.
On scenarios is not good at all.
Yeah, TNA has many. You know, they've done that restart show or the big show they build up for a long time. And you know, they have very good shows when they kick off new directions, and then it always fails afterwards. And
WWE usually, even with, like, Nexus, I mean, the kickoff of that was absolutely awesome. It was one of the best angles in years. And, you know, within a couple of weeks, they were really pretty much back to where they were.
They were, but they have stuck to their guns with Wade Barrett for the most part.
Yeah.
You could argue that perhaps he should have won the championship, but, you know, there's always the Royal Rumble and that sort of thing. I mean, it may be coming, but, I mean...
He's a legit main eventer and everything. Yeah. The rest of those guys are sinking fast, though.
Yeah. All right, let's jump into the mailbag here. We'll do some of these before we wrap it up today. Again, this is our fourth show in 3 days, so if you have not been around over the weekend, go to the archives. We had a show on Friday doing a ton of news, talking about all the WWE cuts. We had the Saturday show covering UFC. We had the show last night covering...
By the way, we should mention that there's actually been kind of an overhaul of the writing team.
Yes, there have been more writers.
I know one guy quit about 3 weeks ago, and it's a guy who I don't even know the name of. And then you know, of course, we know Christopher DeJosephs was cut, and there are others. And what happened was and obviously this stuff has been in the works for at least a while. Vince knew he was going to do it for whatever reason, because they were interviewing a lot of writers in October in Los Angeles, and they're looking for more Hollywood writers. I mean, that's the direction they want to go. You know, the problem with the Hollywood writers is that wrestling is not a sitcom, and, you know, wrestling is the idea of what a wrestling television show is completely different from everything else on television. You know, in the sense that the television is used primarily as a marketing device for all kinds of things, as opposed to just a standalone television show. And also, there's no television show that has the type of quirkiness of the writing that the WWE does, in the sense that you don't have a television show where you write the script on Friday, and then on Monday you come in and somebody tears up the script and goes, okay, now rewrite a new script the day you're actually filming. I mean, you may have tweaks and things like that, but it's never that abrupt, or you have a long-term storyline that you come up with during this week, and then, you know, things obviously change in every television show, and always will, but not to the level of, okay, this is our long-term storyline for this season, and then next week we do the exact opposite, you know, and that does happen with WWE constantly.
I should note that, we'll talk about this in a couple days. I want to check on something first, but let's jump into the mailbag here. This person says, why did WCW and WWF stop running on major holidays such as Thanksgiving and Christmas when those were such good nights to draw? I presume they stopped drawing.
I think with WWF, it's because historically, the WWF, other than Survivor Series on Thanksgiving, I don't remember the WWF territory ever being a holiday territory. So this was something that other promotions did and were very successful with it, but WWF never did it. So from a Vince standpoint, he's not going to copy what worked for somebody else. I mean, if it worked somewhere else, like in another country, yeah, he might copy it, but he's not going to copy something that worked for, you know, Jim Crockett Promotions or Jim, you know, Fritz Von Erich or something like that. As far as the NWA, it was just the Turner people, you know, again, not adhering to, you know, they there's no reason. I mean, it wasn't a situation where it stopped drawing. It actually drew until they just stopped running those dates. And, you know, why you would do that when it was something that was traditionally so successful, got me.
That's why people go out of business.
I mean, Starrcade on Thanksgiving, I mean, like, there was never a Starrcade on Thanksgiving other than that show in Chicago, which Vince sabotaged by running on Thanksgiving. And then they started putting Starrcade in, you know, the Christmas week, which also was traditionally a good week for business. But the point is like, you know, yeah, Thanksgiving night, I mean, TBS, you know, WCW was based in Atlanta. Thanksgiving night in Atlanta, they have a big celebration downtown that ends, I don't know when, like 7 or 7.30 or whatever. People in Atlanta can tell me exactly what it is. But the point is you know, hundreds of thousands of people are down there. And during the 70s and the 80s, they would run the Omni that night, and they would always draw the biggest, you know, either the biggest house of the year or certainly one of the two or three biggest houses of the year, but most of the time the biggest house of the year because people were downtown. And, you know, it was just a tradition in Atlanta. You go to wrestling, you go to wrestling on Thanksgiving night. And there was absolutely no reason for, you know, TBS to drop it other than one year they decided they would go to Chicago on Thanksgiving night because they wanted to be not a Southern promotion. Mm. Actually, this was Jim Crockett who made that call in 87. It wasn't TBS the first time. But TBS certainly could have gone back to it when they owned the company, and they just didn't. So that's your answer. You know, I mean, it's not like it stopped drawing. I mean, the holidays stopped drawing for Vern Gagne in the late 80s, but that's because nothing was drawing for Vern Gagne. I think I remember there was a Thanksgiving show that did like 2,500, and it was like, wow. You know, but the point is they were doing 1,000 for every other show, so it was still better than they usually did. But, you know, it's not like that idea of drawing on holidays, they did it until it stopped working. They stopped doing it.
This person wants to know, basically, if you ever heard of Jumpin' Jeff Farmer.
No.
Okay. He said
Jeff Farmer I know is NWO Sting.
All right. He said he saw a wretched wrestling promo by someone called Jumpin' Jeff Farmer that looked like it was from the 70s, and he didn't know if this was an actual person or maybe if it was some sort of...
Maybe it's a figment of his imagination.
That could also be. All right. Let's see what else we've got here. We talked about the UFC judges attending the press conferences. Okay, just watching the Brett and Bulldog match from SummerSlam, noticed that Bulldog was out of position for a lot of spots. I know the story that Bulldog forgot all the spots after a minute in. Is that story true, or was Bulldog messed up going into the match?
Well, he was messed up with his knee. I know that. As far as messed up that way, I don't think so, because I think...
Brett would have mentioned something, I'm sure, in his book.
I've heard so... You have no idea how much I've heard about that match. I've never heard that about the match. And I don't think that I heard that he forgot all the spots either. But it was... I mean, it was an incredible carry job by Brett, but the only thing that I had heard about Davey was that Davey's knee was bothering him, and that was the problem. It wasn't a mental problem or a drug problem or anything like that, at least on that show.
Any news on UFC or WC having an event in Columbus, Ohio for the Arnold Fitness Classic?
Yeah, nothing this year. They're UFC, WC would have if they had continued the promotion, but they're not continuing the promotion, so it's not. They're not doing it. And I think it's like a great idea to do that. And I'm not sure. I guess they just felt that they went to Columbus. The last time they went to Columbus, maybe selling tickets was a little harder than they liked. So they decided not to do it. And then this year you've got Sydney, Australia on February, the week before the Arnold. And then you've got Abu Dhabi 2 weeks after. So there's no time. And you just can't run a show. You know, you can't run another pay-per-view in the middle. So just the timing doesn't work out at all.
Couple more here. This person says, why did Hulk Hogan do so many jobs in 2003? He always seemed like a guy who wanted to protect himself, yet this year he jobbed to a load of guys like Angle, Lesnar, Rock, Taker, etc.
I think he was, at that point, trying to be a team guy, a team player. And, you know, but yeah, I remember him doing, you know, he did quite a few. The deal, I think, was, in his mind, and I don't, you know, again, I don't know who promised what, because you've got Vince's story and then you got Hogan's story, so you know how that goes. So I don't take sides when it comes to that. Maybe I would take Vince's side, I suppose. I guess if I had to go through long term credibility, I would have to lean towards Vince over Hogan for sure. But still, the deal was is that Hogan felt that by doing those jobs, he was promised another world title run, that he was going to be the first guy to beat Lesnar, and somehow. When he wanted to
can
come
you
back.
Imagine that, by the way?
Yeah, just, I can completely imagine, because he was the same thing with Goldberg.
I know. I'm not saying can you imagine Hogan requesting that, but I mean, can you imagine the idea that the first man to beat Brock Lesnar was going to be Hulk Hogan in 2003?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole Goldberg thing, when Goldberg got super hot, the reason Hogan did that job was because he was promised that he would get the first win back, and then Nash.
Well, sure.
And then work the thing. But the thing with the Hogan and the Goldberg thing, which has nothing to do with this question, although I guess it's something, is the sense that when Hogan beat Goldberg, and there's all that talk about, oh, my God, you know, it should have been on pay-per-view rather than television, and which probably should have been, but that's another issue. To me, the big problem with that, more than that it should have been on pay-per-view or television, is that there was money in rematches with Goldberg and Hogan on pay-per-view. I think that, you know, the first one would have done the biggest pay-per-view number, and that was one that they blew that they could never get back. But the point is that they're, you know, they could have done, you know, another rematch or two and still done, you know, by that year's standards, great, you know, because WCW was pretty strong anyway. They could have done really big business with it, and they wouldn't do it because Hogan wouldn't do the second job, you know, and it was obviously too early for Goldberg to do the first job.
Yeah.
So they just couldn't do the match at all, which I thought was just really sad that you've got this huge, huge money match, and you can't do it because you can't work out a finish because one guy, you know, cannot do another job, you know, so that was the deal there. But yeah, I think that he did all that, and then, you know, he expected to come back, win the title from Brock, and then when Vince wouldn't agree to that, that's when he bailed on them again.
And that's going to do it for today, everybody. We're going to be back on Wednesday with a brand new show. We'll be talking a lot of different news. I don't think we got any TNA tapings this week, but we'll do a lot of stuff.
No TNA tapings for a couple weeks. The TNA was originally scheduled for tonight and tomorrow, but because the Tonight Show was in Orlando, TNA just felt that they didn't want to run a TV taping, you know, head-to-head with Raw in the same city. So they moved everything up to last. That's why they taped last week, among other, you know, reasons. I mean, a little bit of holiday, too. But the real reason was because they didn't want to go tonight against them. And there was, TNA had people passing out all kinds of stuff to people leaving the building tonight, which was pretty smart of them.
So Wednesday we'll probably do a show taking some phone calls and that sort of thing as well. So that's the plan for Wednesday. New issue of Figure Four Weekly up tonight. New issue of The Observer up tomorrow. So check it out. We'll talk to you again after a while.